Okay, Dino, nice to have you on the Metal Command Radio Show and talk about this new Diklute album, which is something that you were obviously playing on and promoting, and, you know, pretty good industrial music, in my opinion. But talk about how this album came together and talk about the making of this record and tell everybody about it.
Well, it kind of started out with a record label called Cleopatra Records. And Cleopatra is known for putting out a lot of industrial music, and I believe they approached Klaus and Jürgen to do a project, and they thought it would be a great idea to get me involved in this project, just to give it a little bit more, a little bit more of a metal, industrial metal type feel.
Right.
So after I spoke to the guys, I was really honored to be, asked to do this project, because obviously these guys, have been doing this industrial music for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Klaus and Jürgen, in their own respectable bands. So get to play with them was a big honor, and it was funny because obviously it's a different genre that I'm really used to. It's a different way of writing music.
Right.
It's a different genre. Music's more repetitive. You know what I mean? And so, I've been a fan of this music for a long time, industrial music, from way back in the early days, from Skinny Puppy and, Frontline Assembly and Ministry and stuff like that. So when they approached me, I was like, yeah, let's do this. And they sent me over the tracks, and I was like, okay, now I'm going to have to, the part of where you're going to put the guitar parts in, that's where I started to get really creative and just trying to make sure that it fits. It sounds really great with the music, and I believe that I did a great job of doing that, and I'm really proud of it.
Now, what I thought was interesting is the Public Enemy cover that you did on this Diklute album, and talk about how that came about in recording that song.
Yeah, the really funny thing is the Public Enemy cover doesn't have any guitars in it.
I know.
Which was weird, because initially I put guitars in it. But I guess in the final mix, they decided to not take the guitars out, maybe because to make it sound different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they decided to do that, but they did. And I was okay with it.
You know, it's interesting with this album, this Diklute album, because everybody's from a different kind of band. You're from Fear Factory, who kind of took that thrash metal element and mixed it with industrial stuff. Then you got Die Krups. And, it's almost like all these guys got together and produced this really cool album, and I thought it really kind of added to the diversity of it.
Yeah, so one of the cool things about when I started Fear Factory, I was working at a record store, so I got to listen to all different genres of music. I mean, obviously, metal is in my heart, and that's the number one thing for me,
mm-hmm.
but I was able to explore and listen to, all the old-school industrial stuff, from traditional stuff, from Kraftwerk to Einstürzende and the Neubauten. Like I said, Skinny Puppy and all that other stuff, more of the electronic stuff, from Nine Inch Nails and Ministry. So I got into all that genre of music. So when we were creating Fear Factory, obviously metal, in Fear Factory, metal's first. Then everything is on top of that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like we didn't write with the keyboards, we wrote organically first, then we brought the keyboards in,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas in like Diklute, we wrote with the drums and the synthesizers first, then the guitar came in. If you understand what I mean.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that's the difference between the two.
When I go and listen to this album, and I know that you're on it, it almost reminds me a bit of when you did Demanufacture with Fear Factory. And then the Remanufacture album, which was basically different versions with different titles of the songs on the Demanufacture album that you'd put out.
So yeah, we treated those songs like new songs.
Yeah.
We didn't treat them as like we're doing just remixes. And some people just do remixes, and it's like, okay, sounds cool, but it doesn't really do anything. Well, we actually wanted the remixes to be its own song, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And some of them we completely changed all the way around. You can even tell it's the song only when the vocals came in, you heard the hook, and maybe you might, know that from the record Demanufacture.
Mm-hmm.
But even going back further than that, when we did our first album, 1992, Soul of a New Machine, we did a remix EP called Fears the Mind Killer, which was also released in 1992, and those were the first remixes that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And one song in particular stood out, and it was called the Scapegoat Pig Mix.
Yep.
And that one was where I said, hey, this was Bill Lieb and Reese Fuller for Frontline Assembly remixed that album. And all of the songs they remixed, it was like four other songs, they did Martyr, Self-Immolation, and Scum Grief. And those were more dancey, electronic, you know, but heavy guitars and vocals, whereas those mixes, the guitars and vocals were second. Where on Scapegoat, I said, look, I would like to try to keep Scapegoat in its original format, but just maybe add different drums and add the keyboards. And from that song, I saw that our music worked really well mm-hmm. with those electronic elements. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So we didn't, like on that song in particular, we didn't change the structure or nothing like that. We just added stuff on top of it. I'm like, wow. Okay, that, judging from that song, that it all worked well, that was what inspired me to do D-Manufacture and
right.
the sound of D-Manufacture. And we wanted to take it to a next level and kind of give it, people kind of describe it, not necessarily just industrial, but people kind of describe it as cyber metal. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because we were bringing something a little bit, we were bringing something a little bit different than just traditional industrial music, because we had a lot of, you know, orchestral parts as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, so, Dino, I have to tell you, you know, the last few Fear Factory albums, actually, since you came back, the heaviness of the band and the vibe of the band has come back with it. I think that even though the records when you were absent weren't bad, I really think that the band had lost something when you were gone. And now that you are back, I think Fear Factory's probably put out the best albums of their career. And, you know, my question is, what is it about you coming back that really led to this?
About that a bit.
I'll kind of tell you why.
Okay.
Because I believe that the first Soul of a New Machine record of Fear Factory and Fear's the Mind Killer, D-Manufacture, there was only three of us. It was me, Raymond, and Bert.
Right.
Me and Raymond wrote all the music, and we were on the same page.
Yeah.
We were like, you know, two peas in a pot. We were on the same level and just what we wanted to create. We didn't want to copy anything else, so we just exactly wanted to do our own thing, and we really connected really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was never that other outside writer coming in to bother us. We just did this. And
right.
Burton put his vocals on top, and it just worked perfectly. And then we had Reese Fuller come in, do all the music. It wasn't until Obsolete where we got another bass player. We started letting the bass player write a little bit of the music, and some of his influence started to come in. Then when he got into DG Mortal, that bass player, that third wheel, I guess you would call it, or fourth wheel, you know, he had more influence on what the record was going to sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we kind of lost, me and Raymond lost something there, because there was that other guy that you had to think about. I mean, you know, some people may take what I'm saying bad, some people may take what I'm saying good, but sometimes when you have a good thing and you try to bring outside writers in, I wouldn't say outside writer, but just another person in just to write with you,
mm-hmm.
sometimes things get lost.
Right.
I believe that's what happened during that period from Digimortal on.
Right.
Things got lost. So then, when I left the group, I got to go do a bunch of other projects that I wanted to do, and I got to go experience a bunch of different things I wanted to do. And when I came back into Fear Factory back in 2009, I had a lot of other influences that I collected, if you know what I mean. Because when you go out there and jam with other people, sometimes those people rub off on you, and you learn things, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so that's what I felt. I went out there and learned things, came back, and I was like, you know, it was just me and Bert. And I was like, boom, we're going to do this record,
yeah.
And it's going to be the shit. There's no outside writers, nobody else clogging the system.
Mm-hmm.
It was just me and Bert connecting and making a sick-ass record.
Right.
I think sometimes when you have too many cooks in the kitchen, things can get, you know, it leads to arguments, everybody wants to put their piece in there. you lose focus, you're thinking about other things, you don't want to piss somebody else off, blah, right. blah, blah. But when it was just me and Bert, and it was just like, boom.
Yeah.
Same page, same level, same way of thinking, knew what we wanted, and we went for it. And that's why Mechanized, Industrialist, and Genexus were very well-focused records.
Right.
And boom. Yes, we did bring other people in, but initially when me and Burton started writing these records, we initially started writing just me and him before we brought somebody else in.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think your comment saying, hey, you know, I believe that when you came back, these are some of your best records, blah, blah, blah. And I agree with you. I 100% agree with you.
Well, and here's the,
I'm not going to say my best records, but some of my best records. Yes.
So it
came back with intent. It was intense. It was intense. I had a lot to prove. I felt like I have a lot to prove, but not just to people, but just to myself in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wanted to take Fear Factory a little bit more heavier in some parts. You know, we wrote some beautiful songs like Final Exit, which is an amazingly beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I believe that, you know, like again, like this, like the Clute record. I've never jammed with like full on hardcore industrial dudes. I mean, Reese Fulber, yes, but other guys, you know, Leather Script, Clute, D-Crups, you know, these guys are like deep in the genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
In that genre of music, and jamming with them, you know, and writing, collaborating with them, you know, also, you know, I'm learning other things as well, too.
Well, for the record, what I'm going to tell you is that I wasn't making that or taking that as a bad comment. What I was saying is that there's something to be said. What I meant is that there's something to be said about musical chemistry, regardless of whether you like somebody, dislike somebody, whether you guys get along or don't get along. You know, there's just certain people that just write music really well together. And I think that when you were out of the band, I think the band really kind of lost a little bit of that chemistry. And that's why, in my opinion, the albums really improved quite a bit when you came back.
Correct. Correct. And like I was saying earlier, that when me and Raymond were on the same page, you know, it was just me and him looking at each other, jamming, mm-hmm. playing, writing, creating. And all of a sudden you bring in this other person, and it's like, it kind of messed up, it kind of the flow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing and learning with all these different kinds of musicians and jamming with them, does it, you know, and being with a diverse amount of people, does it really help keep you as a musician, you know, a band like Fear Factory, keep the diversity there and really help you as a songwriter?
Yes, I think that, you know, meeting up with certain people in my life were very important. I'll give you an example. Reese Fulber. Reese Fulber was a very important, integral part of my musical career because she showed me another element of how far I could take my idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's in my head. You know, and he was able to basically create what I was thinking, which was great. And just, you know, linking up with guys like him really, really helped me be more creative and think further outside the box. And then, you know, being out of Fear Factory was a very integral part in, you know, how I am when I came back. Because mm-hmm. when I was out, I was able to go jam with all these other people. I did stuff with Cypress Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, there's so many people, I can't even name them all. But I've done so many other projects and so many other bands and toured the world in. It's kind of weird because I had Asesino and I have Brujeria, and that's all basically all in Spanish. So you're experiencing the same genre, but different in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is all sung in Spanish. We toured mainly all through South America, you know, and other parts of the world that I've never been to with Fear Factory. And just seeing those fans and what they liked and talking to them was so different than talking to, you know, a Fear Factory fan in Ohio. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh yeah.
But it's kind of funny because, like, some of those fans don't like Fear Factory, and then some of the Fear Factory fans don't like Asesino, so it's kind of weird. It's so separate, but it's the same genre in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's metal music, right? It's metal. It's
right.
heavy stuff. Ossesino is much more extreme, but it allowed me to go explore different parts of the world, different people, mm-hmm. even people in my own country, Mexico, you know, going deeper into Mexico and not going there very much with Fear Factory, but going there with my other band helped me experience other things and appreciate other things. And I think that helped a person and as a musician.
You know, and I'm going to tell you, kind of going along with that, I have to tell you that, you know, I know a lot of great metal fans in Mexico, and they have a pretty awesome heavy metal scene down there.
Why do you think Metallica did their DVD in Mexico? Why do you think Slipknot made their movie in Mexico?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, Metallica put out those live records and live DVDs for Mexico, so.
Absolutely.
You know, Metallica goes out there, and I don't know how many nights they do, 5, 6, 7 nights.
Mm-hmm.
In arenas, massive arenas. Actually, it might even be soccer stadiums. I don't know, but they're massive down there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's just the Mexican people are just very passionate about the music. You know, I mean, in America, yes, you have a lot of people who are passionate about the metal music. A lot of people. As a matter of fact, Spotify just said that metal music has the most dedicated fans in any kind of music.
Right.
Whereas, like, they were kind of saying, like, that a kid, let's say 13, 14, 15-year-old kid who gets into metal, and he's on Spotify, and he likes, I don't know, the new Bring Me the Horizon record, right?
Right.
but then he'll discover Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and yeah. Black Sabbath and like all that stuff too, and then all of a sudden you'll get into other stuff and other extreme music, Cannibal Corpse and blah blah blah, and it grows, right?
Yeah.
And this kid's mind is so intrigued, like, oh my god,
yeah.
You know, and a kid who will like, you know, the newborn of Osiris or whatever will also love old school Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, they were saying in this article, whereas, like, a kid who gets into some trendy hip-hop, you know, thing on YouTube or SoundCloud or whatever,
mm-hmm.
he's listening to Spotify, and he'll listen to whatever's trendy and happening. But he won't go back and appreciate Sugar Hill Gang.
Yeah.
Or he won't go back and appreciate old school Public Enemy or KRS-One, you know what I mean? Or
yeah.
LL Cool J. They just like whatever trendy, popular, and, you know, fashion, driven by fashion, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He might like Cardi B, but he's not, but that kid's not going to go back and, you know, appreciate old school LL Cool J.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Whereas, like, they're comparing it, like, to a metal kid. We'll go back and listen to what's new and hot right now, but he'll go back and discover where it came from.
Right.
And that's what they were saying, the difference in the type of listener. And that's why Spotify was saying that the data was that the kids who like the new stuff in metal loved, also appreciated the old stuff as well.
Absolutely.
And you could tell by just the streams. That's how they could tell.
Right.
Just the streams. And that metal has the biggest following on Spotify.
You know, and the stats don't lie, man. You know, and when you go outside of America, too, you don't see these, like, people segregated into what subgenre of music they like. I mean, I see Cannibal Corpse shirts and Motley Crue shirts at the same, you know, concert, seeing a power metal band that doesn't sound like either one of them. And, you know, that's what the difference is, it seems like to me, as compared to the, you know, many metal fans in the U.S., for example.
For some reason, I don't know what it is, but they're just really more passionate about the music, and they don't forget.
Right.
That's the thing, they don't forget. Yeah, the Doors still sell the shit ton in Mexico. Why? I don't know.
That's crazy.
I don't know.
So do you have a date for when the next Fear Factory album is going to come out? And do you have any details about that?
I got nothing.
No.
I got nothing, yeah.
Okay, well, that answers
it. I was wondering when somebody was going to ask me a question about that, but yeah, I have nothing.
Yeah. I mean, really, to me, this isn't what the interview's technically about for me, but, you know, I figured I'd throw the question in there, you know, see if you guys know, you know.
Of course. I mean, you're the first one, but, I mean, today you're the first one on phone out of the interviews I've been doing, but people ask me every day. I have no information about that whatsoever.
So if there's somebody you'd rather work with, if there's someone you haven't worked with, who would it be? And do you have any other projects coming up that you are going to be involved in?
That's a hard question. The last part of that question was a hard question. Because there's too many to name. There's too many people to name, you know what I mean? But as far as other projects that I'm working on, yeah, I'm working on the third Asesino record, which I've been working on for quite some time, you know, because every time I get into working it, you know, I get called to do another project, like, you know, working on a new Asesino, and then all of a sudden I get called to do Decrops. I'm sorry, Declutes.
Yeah.
Declutes. So, you know, how do I say it? Oh, I'm also working on a solo record, too, and the same thing. It's like, I got to hurry up and finish this record to get to start this record and start this record, blah, blah, blah. And then it's really hard to do multiple records at the same time.
Yeah.
I've tried it. I've done it. And it's not, it's hard. It's hard because things start to blend.
Yeah.
Things start to, like, for instance, I was doing Mechanize. And Fear Factory Mechanized and Divine Heresy's Bringer of Plagues record at the same time. Writing at the same time, mixing and recording at the same time. So my ears are fatigued. I believe I exhausted a lot of my ideas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In other words, I went as far as I can go writing two records at the same time. So doing that is kind of hard. I mean, people like to jump around projects and stuff like that and do things at the same time. But I think sometimes it could suffer. And
right.
For me, what suffered was my ears.
Right.
My ears suffered because you're working on two separate projects, two separate studios. You know, it exhausted me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but luckily both those records were great.
You know, and a lot of work goes into making a record. And, you know, when you're doing so many albums and so many things at the same time, you know, a lot of times, too, it can just be very mentally draining as well.
Yeah, it's just like any job. You really have to. I mean, people don't look at music as a business or a job. That's, mm-hmm. That's the wrong way of going about it because it is a business. The minute a band or a person or an artist makes $1 from what you love to do creating music, you're in business.
Right.
You know, and so that's one of the misconceptions of, you know, people who listen to this music that they think being a rock star is like not working, which is not true.
No.
It's just a different type of work.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and it does get mentally draining. Okay, one of the benefits of being a musician is that you can make your own hours. Okay, that's cool, right? So that's one of the benefits, and that's probably why people don't think it's like, oh, it's not a real job, you're not going to Walmart. Yeah, I'm not going to Walmart. Sure, no, I'm not going to Walmart, but that doesn't mean that I'm not working.
Right. Well, and I think when people realize that, you know, what people also don't realize is that when you're touring, I mean, you're basically living in parking lots a lot and you're sleeping in a coffin on a bus, which, you know, not exactly the most comfortable thing either to be doing day in and day out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, we try to make it as comfortable as possible. Like, for instance, I'll tell you right now, when we're on tour, Walmart is God. And I'll tell you why. You know, you can find a 24-hour Walmart.
Yep.
And they have enough space for you to park your bus.
Absolutely. you're the third person that said that to me, by the way, in the last, like, I don't know, like 3 months.
Listen, they got toilets. Oh, yeah, dude. They got, you know, for anybody who's on tour, that's the number one thing. I'll tell you, Walmart is God. They got toilets. They got paper towels. I mean, you can wash your face. You can brush your teeth. You know, you can take a bird shower. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you can buy whatever you want. If you want to buy something really cheap to eat, go buy a couple of noodles, whatever. They got it there at Walmart. If you need a new pillow, if you need a new blanket, if you need a new, whatever you need, if you want a candle for the bus because people are farting, you buy a candle. You know what I mean? You're there. Walmart is everything there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Number one thing when you're on tour is sleep. You know what I mean? And you can sleep on the bus. Of course, you can't shower at Walmart, but if they had showers, trust me, we would be taking showers. We would be taking showers in there. And, of course, obviously, you can use a bathroom. But truck stops are great.
Yeah.
You know, you can find a cheap shower anywhere between $5 to $15 where you can take a shower and it can be cool. So those are the things that, you know, I forgot what the question was. Oh, yeah. So, we are definitely further, you know, away from home. The hardest thing is being away from home. That's very exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's like, you know, when you're gone for, you know, I mean, we've been gone to where we were like 3 months on the road. 3 months gone in Europe. You know, 3 months in Europe.
Right.
And that's like going on a fisherman boat and being away from your family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, it's... Thank God with technology nowadays, with FaceTime and stuff like that. You know, I was touring back in the day when there was no cell phones that we could afford. You know,
right?
There was no way of calling unless you got into like you were able to sneak a phone call in the production office at a club or at a venue.
Yeah,
you know, and make a long distance call without anybody knowing. You know, it was so expensive back in the day like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a job. And it's just a different type of job.
Now, for my last question, Dino, it was great to have the conversation with you. I really enjoyed it. Any last words for the fans that are going to be checking out this interview on the show?
Yes, I want to tell them, you know, go pick up the Clued record. It's out on Cleopatra Records. It's out now. It's a killer record. It's industrial metal. So you'll love it. And I just want to thank them for many, many, many years of support. And I appreciate it.